Megan, I have been using our sponsor Element, that's L-M-N-T, to boost my hydration for over a month now, and I'm really loving it. I'm just not very good at drinking plain water, and I love the taste when I pop one of these little packets, I like orange or grapefruit, into a big bottle of water. It's kind of fruity and salty, and it just helps me hydrate better overall.
Element is a zero-sugar electrolyte drink mix born from the growing body of research that shows the best health outcomes occur with higher sodium levels. Each little pack delivers a significant dose of electrolytes, but minus sugar, artificial colors, and other iffy ingredients. Element's flavors are so unique, like fruity watermelon salt and spicy sweet mango chili. And we're going to set our listeners up with a variety pack so you can find your favorite.
Right. You can receive a free Element sample pack containing 8 flavors with any drink mix purchase when you purchase through our custom link, drinkelement.com/momhour. That's DRINKELMNT/momhour. This offer is available exclusively through our partnership and is available for both new and returning customers. And if you're an Element insider, you'll have first access to Element Sparkling, a bold can of sparkling electrolyte water. Again, it's drinklmnt.com/momhour.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Megan.
We're two moms with 8 kids between us, from little to grown.
We're in different areas of the country and in different stages of life.
But we both know that motherhood's a lot easier when real moms share tips and encouragement.
And remind you that it's really all going to be okay.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour. Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 198 of the Mom Hour. I am Megan Francis, here as always with Sarah Powers. What's up, Sarah?
Hey Megan, how are you?
Sarah, we're so close to 200 episodes, and you know what that reminds me of?
That we need to do something about it?
Well, we do. But remember how hard of a time I had saying the episode number when we switched from 99 to 100? Like, it was fine when it was 100, but then I couldn't figure out how to say like episode 110. I'd be like episode 110.
So we're going to go through that again is what you're saying?
I think we might go through it again. Unfortunately.
We need a canned intro where you just don't have to ever do that.
I don't have to say
any
numbers.
Some voiceover artist being like episode 201.
Just so Megan doesn't have to think about it. It's pretty sad actually. But I'm not sad about today's topic because this is one of my favorite things that we do every so often. What do you, we do this like quarterly?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We answer questions from you guys.
Love it. We have some really good ones and some really different ones today. We usually do these in two parts, mostly because it makes our lives easier. We record kind of a bunch at once and it's hard to fit in all your questions into one episode. So this week and next week, we'll be answering listener questions. And this week, it's kind of fun because I also am joined toward the end of the show by Allison Thompson, who's kind of our resident new mom contributor. She now is a mom of 2. They were 2 under 2 when the baby was born, but her older is now 2. But we actually took some listener questions, Allison and I. So this entire episode is listener questions. But toward the end, it'll be kind of new mom stuff with Allison. And you guys chimed in on Instagram with questions for her about how things are going as she's adjusted from 1 baby to 2, which is a topic. I don't know. We get that all the time. It's a hot topic around here.
Yeah.
So stick around for that in the second half of the show.
Megan, the end of the school year and kickoff to summer is a busy time of the year for families, but we can all eat stress-free and hit our wellness goals with ready-to-eat meals from our sponsor, Factor.
Factor's delicious meals are never frozen and can be ready to eat in just 2 minutes. You can pick from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular choices like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Plus, they have more than 60 add-ons like breakfast, lunch, snacks, and beverages to keep you fueled all day long.
So our team was comparing notes recently on our favorite Factor meals, and Katie loved the herb-crusted chicken with mashed cauliflower and toasted almond green beans. I loved that one too. And get this, so did her little boy, Charlie. She heated it up for lunch one day, and Charlie, who's 3, ate almost all of the green beans. I mean, that's quite an endorsement, right?
I was going to say, what a parenting win. And I get it, Charlie. Those green beans are crazy good. And if you really want to treat yourself, they even have meals with filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Listeners, head to factormeals.com/momhour50 and use code MOMHOUR50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code MOMHOUR50 at factormeals.com/momhour50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. We are welcoming back Vionic as a sponsor today. And Sarah, I will be honest. I was sorting through my warmer weather wardrobe the other day, and it could seriously use a refresh. But you know what's good to go? My shoes. I've got a great selection to choose from thanks to the Vionic Vitals collection. And lately, the pair I keep putting on again and again is the Uptown Loafer. I have two pairs, one in sand suede and the other in camel leather. But please don't make me pick a favorite.
Oh, I won't. I'll let you keep both. That's so funny, Megan, because I was a little jealous of your Uptown Loafers. I was the last one on our team to get a pair, but I just did. I also got mine in the sand suede, and I think I've worn them like four times this week. They really finish off a cute spring outfit. The Vionic Vitals collection has the best essential styles for everyday wear to get you ready for spring. And no matter what shoes you choose, you'll be on the go in comfort because every single pair of Vionic shoes delivers their trademark VioMotion technology for a difference you can feel. Vionic sandals, sneakers, and flats all offer incredible support, stability, and cushioning, and every pair comes with a 30-day risk-free trial, so it's easy to try them out.
Use code THEMOMHOUR15 at checkout for 15% off your entire order at vionicshoes.com when you log into your account. That's a one-time use only. Vionic shoes. Wearable well-being for your feet.
Okay, Megan.
All right, we'll dive in.
Yeah, so our first question came from Kathleen, and she called it in or recorded her voice, which we love ever so much. So let's just go ahead and listen to her question now.
Hi, Megan and Sarah. This is Kathleen. I'm a longtime listener with two boys, ages 5 and 8. And I have a question about the topic of self-regulation. We have always been pretty strict with our kids about screens and sweets. And as my oldest is about to turn 9, I'm realizing that we need to start working on helping him develop his own sense of self-control and self-regulation and discipline. And I'm just wondering if you have any suggestions about how to transition from being the parent who controls everything and access to all of the, you know, in this case, sweets and screens in the house, to starting to let go of that and giving your kids an opportunity to develop the ability to regulate themselves, just how to navigate that. So I would be grateful for any suggestions that you might have. I really enjoy the podcast, and thanks so much.
Okay, Kathleen, this is a great question. And just like anytime I feel like anyone asks us a question like this, I just feel like we have to give all these qualifiers.
disclaimers
and qualifiers, right? Well, the first one I guess I would say is this does happen. It will happen, but it's going to happen gradually. So you're not going to necessarily see them developing that self-regulation like quickly. Like just because you make a change
right,
doesn't mean they're going to get it right away. And keep in mind that all kids come into this, like self-regulation is a skill, and it's a skill that takes time to regulate, and all kids get it in different ways at different speeds. It's not linear, like
right,
we've talked about before.
Right.
Like you might be making great progress and then have to kind of put the reins back on a little bit. So, I mean, just like everything, Sarah, I feel like whenever we talk about parenting kids, especially older kids, we like, it's talk, 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 model, model, model.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, do the thing you want them to do, make sure they see you doing the thing you,
right,
that you want them to do, talk about it a lot. And you can ask open-ended questions. Like one of the things I like, I've got one kid in particular who is very focused. Like he can get really sucked into stuff. And this is Owen, and he's 13 now. So he's got a little more independence, and I don't like hover around his bedroom door at night. And I've had days where he's dragging in the morning. And when I've asked him, you know, oh, were you up a little too late last night? Oh, that doesn't feel so good, does it? I think you have to let them kind of make those mistakes sometimes, like safely make mistakes.
Yeah.
So that they can experience those consequences.
Okay, I love what you said. I have to say the reason I picked this question among the many that we got is I was like, oh, I want to hear what Megan says about this, because I'm more newly at the beginning of this.
Right.
So Kathleen's kids are 5 and 8. My oldest is 10. But as you guys know, I do lean a little bit more controlling. And she mentions sugar and screens, which I have to say, like screens and sweets are probably the two most addictive things that even the most kind of well-regulated kid would probably love to gorge out if they could. So I loved hearing your thoughts. A couple of thoughts I had, I love the idea of asking questions and giving maybe small opportunities for self-regulation. I know when we travel in particular is when my rules really relax, and I am more likely, just like you said, to say, huh, your tummy hurts. Really? I wonder what, like, how have you been eating lately? Tell me what you had today. Oh, Okay, so you haven't really had any foods that give you energy. You've just been eating yesterday's candy. Okay. You know, like,
right.
And I do think if you don't feel comfortable completely, like, I mean, I'm sure Kathleen wasn't thinking of like relaxing all rules, but it is helpful, I think, sometimes to have little experiments. Maybe it's the day after Halloween or the day after their birthday where you just decide, you know what, just go for it today. And then let's see how you feel. I also think it's always okay as a parent to relax rules, but then reserve the right to take them back. Like,
oh yeah,
hey, you know, sure, this summer I'm going to let you guys moderate your own video game use. And if I see that it's becoming a problem, we will have to readjust, yep, you know? So you, it's not like you can't go back or adjust. I think it's awesome that she's even thinking about this, because I think it is something that sometimes we almost realize like later than we meant, right, to, that like, oh, and I, this does happen to me. Like I have a 10 and almost 11 year old who will ask me about, mom, can I have an apple? Can I have a banana? And she's such a rule follower. And I almost cringe now because I think, oh gosh, like she doesn't,
I'm never going to say no to an apple.
Right. And she doesn't need to ask me for every little snack. I actually really want her to have good, you know, self-regulation around food. So I think it's really awesome that Kathleen's even thinking about this at these ages. And then, yeah, I think my final thought is that like those two things, screens and sweets, are probably going to be the hardest. So maybe there are other areas, I don't know, sleeping or waking up. And summer is a great time, mm-hmm, I think, to also play with these things because everybody's schedules are different and sometimes the stakes seem a little less high. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think like the first day of the weekend is a good day too, if you want to kind of start testing it out, like probably not Saturday night, cause then you're going to have a hard time getting back on track.
Right.
Sunday. I like what you said about, you know, you can go back and reenact those rules. And I guess the way I think about it is like everyone falls off the wagon.
Yeah.
Like, adults do too, right? We all need limits. Like, I don't have sweets in my house typically because if they're there, I'll eat them.
Right.
Like, so it's not just about, it's about creating an environment where everybody can win.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes that might mean like, hey guys, I know that if we don't all put our phones like on this charging station tonight, we're all going to be tempted to look at them tonight. Let's all do that. It's not like a punishment. And I think sometimes if you do loosen things a little bit too much and you realize, like we talked about, I feel like a couple episodes ago, sometimes you just realize things aren't working and it's not like you're mad at anybody or it's a consequence or a punishment. You just be like, yeah, you know what? We're all watching a little too much TV or we're all like on our devices too much. Let's get back on track. This week, we're going to do X, Y, and Z.
Oh,
and
you know, when we talked about that is in our Patreon bonus. So if people if it doesn't sound familiar, guys, you're not crazy. It was, we just dropped our bonus episodes for Patreon. So not to tease. Yeah, we did.
No, I totally didn't mean to. I just remembered having talked to you about it, but we talked about
discipline and
punishment and discipline. Yeah. And I was saying sometimes something can be a consequence without looking like a consequence. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not like a punishment. It's not like you're saying you screwed up. Now you're, you know, now
in the doghouse,
like you can't. Yeah, like you're in the doghouse or now we're putting limits back on and I'm really going to drop the hammer. It's more like, oof, guys, I'm not loving how this is going. And we all need like a reset or this needs to change. And I think you can do that. And then it makes it like, again, it's kind of blaming the thing that's the temptation rather than blaming the kid.
This is becoming a problem. Yeah.
Right. This is a problem. This thing that we all, this technology that we use, the sugar is so tempting.
Yeah.
And I know if it's around me, I'm going to want it too. So you know what, you guys, like, I'm really not going to have any in the house for a while or whatever it is. And I think that that also models like, because when you're an adult and there's no one to tell you what to do, then, and when you don't necessarily want to do it for yourself and you don't care that you'll feel like crap tomorrow, how do you then self-regulate? Well, sometimes you control your environment. Like that's often the way you have to do that. So I think that's another healthy coping mechanism kids can learn.
Yes. Time. No, I love the way you talked about kind of modeling it for yourself and sometimes modeling. I mean, we all know we're going to, you know, try and show a good example, but sometimes you have to add a little bit of context for kids who aren't, they're not noticing your behavior or your choices. Right. So sometimes you have to say, you know, I've noticed I've been dragging in the morning lately. So I'm really making an effort to, you know, have some protein and a little less sugar in the morning. And, you know, it sounds corny sometimes to, but kids are interested in that kind of stuff. And if you consistently model that and kind of talk about the choices you make around sugar and screens and everything else that leads to kind of a regulated adult healthy lifestyle, they do pick it up whether they enact it right away or not. I think last final thing is, I know with food, I have kids who listen to their body and kids who do not. So don't feel like it's your fault or you're not doing the right things if you have a kid who literally would eat themselves sick. Cause I have one who would, and I have one who's like, nope, I'm full, or I, you know, I don't, my tummy hurts or I don't feel good. Or So it's not,
I mean, you'll have kids who will eat themselves sick and then not even care,
right?
Like not even care that they did it. Like it's not a deterrent for them. Right, you know, right. it's like my dog who wouldn't stop yes. eating.
I was going to say it's like
the
a table, dog.
Even when I was zapping her with like the shock collar, she would just look at me and be like, meh, whatever. And then she'd go right back to it. Like some, not trying to compare people's kids to dumb dogs, but you know what I mean?
Yep. Yep. But
sometimes the treat is more important to them than the.
Yeah. And that I think is a personality thing, but yeah. I think like major pat on the back, Kathleen, for even thinking about this at 5 and 8. I think that's a really good time to start to just think about it.
Yep.
Okay. Agreed. Next question. I will set this one up. It came via Facebook from Morgan, and I have to say something about Facebook. No offense, Facebook, but the way we manage our mom hour page on Facebook, the messages that we get super hidden sometimes, and mm-hmm. I swear I see them come in and then I can't find them later. It's just the way that the back end is. So if you've ever sent us a message via Facebook, yeah. first of all, we try and grab it and add it to the list, and Morgan's that I'm about to read to you, hers made it through. But if we've ever not responded, try emailing us. You can always hello@themomhour.com.
I feel like it shows them in weird orders and stuff.
Yes.
And like, yes.
And if you mark it as read, it like disappears forever.
It disappears
and I was like,
forever.
Wait, no, I read it, but where was
that? I want to look at it again. Yeah.
Yes. So anyway, just lovely Facebook. So this came via Facebook from Morgan, but you guys should just email us because it was one of the lucky few that survived. So she asks if we've tackled the topic of communicating with other parents of kids that your kids share in the class. So she has a preschool situation where her son has gotten in trouble a little bit a couple of times with another child, and she tried reaching out to the other parent involved and it did not go so well. In fact, the other parent maybe told her kid not to hang out with her kid. You see where this yeah. is going. This
right,
is like
yep.
4-year-olds having maybe some dynamics between them, and then the mom's trying to get involved. And she asked, has this ever happened to us, or have we ever dealt with this at the preschool level? So yeah. I don't know. I have some thoughts. I know you have some thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I think it sucks.
Yeah.
I guess I would say like, I think I'm sorry that it happened. It does yeah. happen. It will continue to happen
yeah.
on some level. And I'm sure Sarah, that you would agree that like supporting your own kid is the first,
yes,
is the first priority. Cause that's all you have control of.
Yes.
You really have no control over anything else about the situation.
Yeah. I agree. That was kind of what came up for me. I think preschool in particular is really hard because it's right at the moment where your kids might actually start to care about their friends and what people think mm-hmm. of them. I don't know if your kids were like that. I had a couple of kids who didn't care so much about friends in preschool, but a lot of 4-year-olds, they do care. They do have friends. They have very good
yeah.
friends, and they care about getting their feelings hurt, and they want to be a good friend and all that. But it's also the moment where you're spending quite a bit less time observing your kids socially. So I'm sure Morgan's feeling like, I don't even know what happened. Like,
right.
and now we're trying to communicate, you know, to the other mom via 4-year-old sometimes. So I was going to say the same thing, that I think the priority has to be your kid's experience at school and making sure that you're addressing that at home first. In other words, talking to them about their day, trying to kind of figure out if there are things they're struggling with, where's that coming from? Just asking a lot of open-ended questions like we've talked about in the past. And then the next step, I think, would be the teacher. And when you meet or talk with a teacher, I think it's most helpful when you keep it about what you're observing about your kid at home. Like,
yeah,
my kid seems really upset about some playground dynamics. Here's what I've noticed at home. At home, you know, he's crying in the morning. He doesn't want to go to school, or he tells me he's worried about this. And you're not saying like, this and this happened on the playground, because it is, you don't know. And that's not to take away from what Morgan's kid experience, but just that I have found it's most successful when I can approach a teacher with what I have noticed at home, and then they can come with, here's what I have noticed at school. Mm-hmm. And then I think the other kid's parent is probably the last place I would go.
I don't think I would.
Yeah, I haven't. It hasn't been something that's come up for me. Because
for a 4-year-old, I would not.
Yeah.
I can't see that unless it was a continuing problem. And it doesn't, in this case, it doesn't necessarily sound like that. It sounds like the other boy told the little boy, which is unfortunate. My
yeah.
mom says, don't play with you anymore.
Yeah.
And then it kind of sounds like maybe that was kind of it. Right. So
yeah.
like, unless it's an ongoing thing where like your son's coming home every day upset because now this little kid won't play with him anymore, I almost feel like that could just be adding fuel to the fire rather than focusing on finding friendships that are positive.
Yes.
And will like be a nurturing thing for this kid.
Like, yes.
And you never know. Like, I think we've talked about this a lot on the show. Sometimes we take things on that for our kids are a blip.
Yeah.
Like it's a blip. It makes them sad in the moment, but then they move on and they make new friends and it's a positive thing now.
Yeah.
And they're not worried about it, but we're still stewing.
Yeah. Well, and you would, if your kid, your kid told you like, so-and-so said, his mom said, I'm not supposed to play with him. That's really hurtful.
Right. It is.
Yeah.
But you don't know unless the son is showing this, if that he's still being actively hurt by it.
Exactly.
So I think sometimes like trying to kind of stay involved in something that's not a thing anymore just makes it a thing that like, it could have been some offhand comment the mom made, like, well, I heard you guys are getting in trouble. Maybe you shouldn't pal around together anymore. And then forgot all about it.
Right.
So like months later, who knows how that conversation would even go. I just don't know that at 4 years old, these relationships are really that entrenched yet.
Yeah. And you bring up a good point, which is we don't know the context of how the other mom made this comment, but let's assume the worst for a second and assume she's really unkind and told her 4-year-old, don't hang out with Aiden because he's bad news.
Right.
That's, she's probably not going to be receptive to any kind of a problem solving solution you come up with. So like that, I would stay even further away if I thought she really was that way. Now, maybe she meant it like you said, Megan, which is more of a like, huh, seems like there's a problem here. Maybe we should mix up the friend groups. And it was a little more benign and got taken out of context. I wanted to bring up an interview I did a while ago with Eileen Kennedy Moore, who's a psychologist and an expert in kids and friendships, because she told me something that until I had this conversation, I hadn't thought of, which is the importance of play dates at this age. And I kind of almost rolled my eyes because I don't love setting up play dates. It's a lot of work. I don't want to hang out with the other mom all the time. But socially for little kids, play dates are often a way better opportunity, number one, to observe your kids socially and kind of see how they react. But also, if they're still getting used to classroom dynamics and having like 20 other kids, behavior in a big group can be really different and so overwhelming for a lot of kids. And so it can actually be a great way for kids to practice their social skills if they are having trouble in preschool, having trouble on either end, either they're like, they're in everybody's business or they're really shy, having one-on-one or two-on-one or small group play dates can be really helpful. And I, you know, I don't love hosting play dates. I don't like coordinating them,
no,
but she did kind of educate me that that can be a really good proactive strategy to watch your kids socially and to maybe build some friendships that then can carry into the classroom. So I just wanted to offer that. That's, back in October 2017, and it's called Kids and Friendships. So that episode was really interesting, and she answered some specific preschool social dynamic questions in that interview.
That's a really good suggestion, because I'm also not a huge lover of
play
dates, but looking back, I can see how for some of my kids especially, they were, when I did, you know, go through the effort to set them up, they were beneficial. I think I would just say for the last thing to Morgan is that, you know, it is so normal for 4-year-olds to quote get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so normal for two certain kinds of kids to like get each other all whipped up. Like a kid who maybe at home would never be that kind. Like it's like there's this certain dynamic that certain like pairs of kids have. And this is going to happen throughout your child's life.
Yeah.
Maybe they're a follower and this other kid's this tough leader. Maybe they're both leaders and that means they kind of are trying to outdo each other. Like there's so many different little dynamics that can create this sort of stinker on stinker dynamic. You know what
Hashtag
I mean?
Where, stinker on stinker. Yes. I love it.
And in preschool, there is so much shame around our kids' behavior that, you know, Morgan says that she approached this other mom to talk to her about two specific incidents that happened. Now, while she didn't mean it in any kind of way to like come down on this mom, I can totally see why in that situation, the other mom might have felt very like defensive or whatever. And the whole thing might have just gotten blown out of proportion relative to really the damage that was being done. Or like, so I'm not trying to excuse the other mom. I do think it's stinky that this little boy told this other little boy that like he won't play with him. But there's so much happening in this, like this is a little microcosm of like all of the personalities involved.
Yeah.
And it's like a drama. It's like a little soap opera playing out in this tiny little microcosm. And everybody has their own story about what happened.
Yeah.
Including the kids. Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's just at some point, unless this mom is like a good friend of yours, or you feel like now it's awkward with the other mom and you want to repair that relationship.
Yeah.
I think it's just so normal that I would be inclined to just downplay it and let it go. That would be my inclination. But
I think I agree. And it's so fraught in the early preschool years, like we've said. So I think it does get a little easier as they move through. The kids get better at, it just all gets easier. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Moving on, we are going to take a really fun question from Alicia. She sent it in by email. Do you want to set this one up, Megan?
Sure. So I don't think I'd ever heard it referred to this before, so this is kind of fun for me. Alicia asks, how do you manage your drop zone in your home? And what she means by that is where you throw all your crap when you walk in the door, I guess. So she said, we just did a little renovation to build a mudroom in our home, and I'd like to set it up for success. How do you keep your drop zones organized? How do you keep on top of shoe, boot, winter gear mess?
I feel like you're going to have so much to say. Do you want me to go first? Since mine will probably be quicker.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I don't have winter, so I can't speak to that.
Right.
The first thing I want to say is no drop zone organization or mudroom organization system works without well-trained children who know the routine to make it work. Does that make sense? So this is a routine question as much as it is a home organization system. And I have lived that the last few years as I've gone from one kid in school full-time to two to three. So functionally, we don't have a mudroom. We have a set of hooks right inside the garage, right before you come into the house. And our after-school routine is that they hang up their backpacks. They take their lunch boxes out. They bring their lunch boxes to the kitchen, and they're responsible for emptying out the bento box and all the uneaten food and putting the lunch box away in the cupboard. And the backpacks stay out there. For papers and stuff, they usually leave anything like that in their backpacks, and then I will go collect them. They usually actually only bring papers home once a week. So then on Fridays, I might go get the folders myself. I'd rather leave everything on the hook in the garage if possible. Shoes are a little bigger issue for us. At the beginning of the year, I was having them take their shoes off right when they got home and put them in these shoe cubbies out there because people were having trouble finding their shoes in the morning. And unlike summer, where you can throw on any old pair of flip-flops, like they only had one pair of school shoes. They needed to know where it was. I will say it's gotten a little lax, but they have also gotten better at least remembering where their shoes are. So Allegra tends to take hers off in her closet upstairs. And we also have a shoe basket in our kind of entry area. And so any miscellaneous shoes that get dropped find their way there. So that's where we are.
Yeah. It's so funny when you're describing that. That sounds almost exactly the way our after-school routine went when my kids were more similar to your kids' ages. Oh,
that makes me happy for sure.
Yeah,
reason.
Like almost exactly the same. Things have changed for several reasons. One, my kids all get home at different times a day now.
Right.
So the routines are just different. And where they want to work on their homework changes. Like they might, you know, we don't have like the setup before was we had kind of this one little homework area. Now people kind of like, we don't have a designated homework area. People might work at the table. They might work in their own bedrooms. Also, we're in the midst right now of just like absolute crazy weather swings where one day it might be warm enough for like a hoodie.
Yeah.
And the next day you have to have snow pants, a coat, boots, the whole nine yards. And so, and we also live in a really tiny house now. So, I think that just in general, what I would say about drop zones, they tend to be, if you have a mudroom, they tend to be kind of in these like forgettable areas of the house, which makes them sort of out of mind, out of sight, out of mind, but you really can't forget them, right? You have to actively manage them, whether it's you or a kid that you assign to be the one who goes through and make sure everything's going well. No matter, even if the kids' routines are great, so they're gonna anytime you ease up, there's a good chance someone's gonna try to get away with something, like bringing their backpack in an area of the house they're not supposed to bring it into, or whatever it is, right? So, another thing that I've found is like now our drop zone is literally like a 3x5 area in front of the door. And I have to make sure I don't try to make that space do more than it can do.
Yeah.
Like I have to be really like, I don't know, not overly optimistic about how much crap I can cram into that area, which means the drop zone might only get 1/10 of the things that the kids walk in the house with, which means you have to have a plan for everything else. So like just thinking that through, like what absolutely needs to go right here? Well, for us, it's probably the shoes you wear in, because I don't want you wearing those through the house, which should be the shoes you're going to wear back out the next day, right? Yeah. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense having them there. If you're wearing these shoes and it's a special occasion, or for some reason you don't think you'll wear those shoes again tomorrow, then they don't go in the drop zone. They have to go someplace else. We don't have room for backpacks in our drop zone. Those have to go in kids' bedrooms. Coats can go in the adjacent closet. But like, again, if it's like a coat and a hoodie and snow pants, then you might have to hang it in your bedroom closet. And some of that just takes me, because there's so many moving parts when you live in a climate like this, like I sometimes just have to look and go, okay, I'm seeing too much stuff. Yep. You grab this, you grab that, get this out of here, get this out of there. And it just requires me to be on top of it a little more than it seems like I should be.
Yeah, but that's just but that's just reality
too. It's life. Right.
I've thought of a couple other kind of practical things. One is hooks have to be really strong.
Yes.
There's nothing worse than right now in our little drop zone, the hooks are kind of coming out of the wall. And I'm like, oh, I don't think you can hang a heavy backpack on there. And by the same token, if you have shoe cubbies or baskets or bins, I think I've given this tip before, but don't plan bins that always need to be filled to the, or that will be filled to the top. There's nothing worse than like looking for gloves at the bottom of an overstuffed yep. bin. So think like you see in the magazines where there's like two things in a lovely wicker basket. There's a reason for that. You can find it more easily and it's not, there will always be more stuff that gets added in. So stronger hooks than you think, and either more or bigger baskets than you think, or less stuff, because
yep.
Where we start to run into organizational backlog is when there's too much stuff.
Yeah.
And that's whether you have
too much stuff. Like it's yeah. yeah. Too much, too many things crammed into too small of a space.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they have those, the, like, I don't even what you call it, like a coat tree or whatever. Yes. They have like mm-hmm. three little bins that yeah. pull out. I, for a while, had one of those in my foyer and I was like, oh, this is perfect. There's three bins. I can put scarves in one, mittens in one, and hats in another. Well, what ended up happening was just a hot mess and stuff crammed, like
yeah.
just like crammed down so far. You could never make a pair of gloves in the morning. And I realized that what made more sense was for my kids to stuff their mittens in their pockets. Like it just made yeah. more sense, right? It wasn't pretty. It wasn't taking advantage of this beautiful thing.
Right.
The same way, but it made so much more sense. And then kids weren't stealing each other's gloves by accident yeah. or losing one on the way, you know? So it sometimes you don't use things the way they look like they were intended.
Right.
To be used.
Well, and especially yeah. when I'm picturing like this pretty mudroom, because they just designed it. So I'm right. sure Alicia's had, you know, the Pottery Barn visions of how it's going to look oh, yeah. and feel. And there will be some kind of an adjustment period like that,
yep.
that you just described, where you realize how you actually need the space. But
yep.
I feel like depending on the ages of kids, I cannot emphasize enough how the training of the soldiers is as important as the organizational space. And that just requires a lot of like, oop, I noticed that you dropped your coat yep. over here. Please go hang it up. Go hang yep. up your backpack. Where does your backpack go? Like you just do it
reminders forever.
Yep. But they may never be perfect, but they'll at least know where stuff goes. And I have found as a household manager, if I'm the only one who knows where stuff goes, it's a lonely place to be because you can't ask for help. And then they just look at you like, oh, I didn't know.
Or you do and it doesn't get done right even when
right,
you ask.
Because yeah. you haven't trained them. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great question.
Okay, Megan. Well, over here at the Mom Hour, we are big fans of our sponsor, Our Place. In fact, you, me, and our team member, Katie, were all comparing notes on our favorite product. Katie was telling us that even though she's packing up to move her family to a new house, she cannot put that mini perfect pot from Our Place into the boxes yet because she's using it like every night.
Well, as someone who also has a perfect pot, I got mine as part of their mini home cook duo set. I get it. It's nonstick, which is key, but it also has all these handy features like a steam release lid with a built-in strainer and this nice beechwood spoon that nests on the handle in this perfect little peg.
Okay, well, I didn't get this pot, but now I want it. That sounds so great. Our Place's cookware is great to cook with, beautiful to look at, and healthier for us as well. All of Our Place's products are made without PFAS, also known as forever chemicals. In addition to their cookware and tableware, Our Place is also making waves with their Wonder Oven, the most stylish all-in-one air fryer and toaster oven. Again, free from the forever chemicals found in many of those air fryers.
Listeners, Our Place offers a 100-day trial with free shipping and returns, and we've got a great deal for you. Go to fromourplace.com and enter the code MOMHOUR at checkout to receive 10% off site-wide. That's fromourplace.com, code MOMHOUR. Sarah, our sponsor Hiya Health makes a kid's daily multivitamin that parents can feel great about giving their kids because they have no added sugars or dyes. And our kids who have tried Hiya vitamins have loved them, which is important, right? Because what good is a bottle of vitamins that your kid won't take?
Hiya was founded by two dads who didn't like the ingredients label on some of the popular children's vitamins they were seeing on store shelves. So they got to work developing a formula that would help fill the most common nutrient gaps in modern kids' diets. Hiya's Chewable Kids Vitamin is made with a blend of 12 organic fruits and vegetables and then supercharged with 15 essential vitamins and minerals. They're also vegan, dairy-free, allergy-free, gelatin-free, and nut-free.
Hiya manufactures their vitamins right here in the USA with globally sourced ingredients, and then they ship their chewable vitamins directly to your door on a pediatrician-recommended schedule. We've worked out a special deal with Hiya for their best-selling children's vitamin. You're going to get 50% off your first order. To claim this deal, go to hiyahealth.com/momhour. This deal's not available on their regular website. Go to hiyahealth.com/momhour and get your kids the full body nourishment they need to grow into healthy adults.
Okay, so before I chat with Allison, just a couple of things. I wanted to remind you guys that you can send us questions like these anytime. There's a couple ways to do it. A lot of listeners like SpeakPipe. You can go to our website, themomhour.com, and there's a little SpeakPipe widget right in the sidebar, or you can also go to speakpipe.com/themomhour. The reason it's cool, it does the recording for you, and you can also preview and erase your recording if you don't like it. And so we all get a little stage fright when the mic is on, right? So that works really well. Or if you're comfortable with your phone's voice memo recorder, most mobile phones have one, you can record your voice and that becomes an audio file that you can email us at hello@themomhour.com. So we get questions both of those ways pretty frequently. We love when we hear your voices. You don't have to. You can also just email us, but we extra love when we hear your voices. So that's really fun.
It's one of our favorite things.
Yep.
We also want to say hi to our new patrons, something we're hoping we're going to do a little more often because it's the community is growing and it's so fun. So welcome to those of you who joined our community last month. Jennifer E., Karen H., Carla, Jessica, Karen K., Michelle, Celeste, Kristen, Courtney, and lastly, Jennifer L., who upped her pledge last week to join our editor-level community. She got those bonus episodes that we dropped last week that we inadvertently talked about today. I totally didn't do that on purpose. I did not mean to tease those.
Yeah, we did.
It was a great conversation.
Yeah, we did one on discipline and consequences, and we did one on our favorite recipes. So two totally different. And there are two of those per quarter when you're at the editor level. So.
Yep. It's like a little bonus audio with a downloadable. So it's kind of like an episode with like a little extra something. So yeah. If you want to support us via Patreon and get fun perks like a private Facebook group and bonus audio classes each quarter, just go to patreon.com/themomhour.
Yep. We'd love to see you guys there. Okay, Megan. Well, next week we're going to take some more questions, but right now
you're kicking me out.
I am. I'm kicking you out. Right now we're going to hear my conversation with Allison.
All right. I'll let you guys get to it.
Hey, Allison. Welcome back to the show.
Hey there. Thanks for having me.
So real life, you have baby Brooke with you right now.
I do as we speak.
There may be baby noises. We welcome them, of course. Just remind everybody how old your two little girls are right now as we record this.
Yeah. So Claire turned 2 in November and Brooke is about 5.5 months now. So.
I can't believe 5.5 months.
It went by so fast and I'm going back to work next month and a lot of things are happening, but way too quickly.
A lot of things are happening. Well, that's kind of perfect for how we wanted to structure this segment today. Typically when you come on, we kind of focus on one area. And we've been following along since you were pregnant with Brooke. But Megan and I just answered some listener questions. People heard that. So we're just going to continue with some listener questions that came in for you via Instagram. A month or two ago, we kind of invited questions, and a lot of these are coming from moms who are about to have baby number 2 or who are right there in the thick of it with you. So if you're good, I'm just going to jump right in and start asking you some questions.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay, so the first category people wanted to know about was sleep. And so my first question for you is, where is everybody sleeping right now? Like physically where? Bassinet in your room or 2 cribs, or how has that worked over the last 5 months?
All right. So right now, Claire is actually still in a crib, which I love. I will keep her in a crib for as long as I possibly can. And she shows no interest in coming out. So she is staying in there.
Nice.
Brooke has her own room with a crib, which she takes naps in. But during the night, she actually sleeps in just a halo bassinet right next to me.
Okay. Does that wake you up at all? I mean, obviously she wakes you up.
Oh, yeah.
But I just remember the noisy baby problem after a couple months. So I'm impressed that she's still there. She must not be making you too crazy after 5.5 months.
No. And actually, I tried to transition her to a crib a little bit earlier. I wanted to wait till 6 months, but nobody was getting any sleep. Like you said, like any breathing noises, it's like, oh,
right.
Is she okay?
Right.
And the transition didn't go well. So I decided to just kind of pull back. She wasn't ready. And we're going to give it another go here when she's 6 months.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Yes. She does wake me up.
Yes. That makes sense. Well, I mean, and I thank you for being honest about that. Cause I think sometimes people think like it's all gotta be like buttoned up by 12 weeks or 8 weeks or whatever. So I think it's much more real life that it isn't. So another listener asked about putting baby down for naps when you mm-hmm. also have a toddler at home. Now, Claire is in daycare preschool some of the time, but I know you are at home with both of them at least some of the time. Have you run into that challenge or putting either of them down for a nap, I guess, while the other one's awake?
Any kind of sleep when you've got to, I feel like, is just challenging in general because there's the whole who wakes up who mm-hmm. scenario. So Claire is in preschool most of the time. But when she's home, I kind of just have to go with the flow for Brooke's naps. Mm-hmm. Claire's naps are rigid as could be. She goes up into her room. She can choose to nap or not to nap, but she's in there from 1 to about 3. Mm-hmm. And usually she'll nap, but sometimes she'll just play in her crib. Mm-hmm. But for Brooke, we've really had to figure out how to make that work because Claire, when she wants to help, sometimes she just wants to wake Brooke up just very openly. Right. And so I've done a lot of baby wearing. Mm-hmm. I really like the opportunity to have her next to me. She will fall right asleep. And I haven't found that it's given her any problems for when she does nap in her crib.
Right.
And then sometimes it's napping on the way home mm-hmm. from dropping Claire at school. And sometimes it's swing, but it's getting that sleep in how she can and hopefully having the 2-year-old not wake her up.
Yeah.
But it's the distractions for the 2-year-old while she's sleeping is kind of the best route.
Right. So like giving Claire something to do while you're putting Brooke down, if you do decide to put her down in the crib.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like really special toys or things that she doesn't get very often is what I found a lot of success with. But even so, it's not a perfect science. And very often she's being woken up.
Well, and what I remember is that with each baby, you know, like with the brand new newborns, there's so much flexibility that you don't really put them on a schedule. You kind of let them fall asleep wherever. And then, you know, eventually it's almost like baby tells you when it's time, like, oh no, I need to be like in a more quiet room. I need a little bit more of a schedule. And for me, it was always like the baby kind of let me know because they'd be super grumpy. They'd be waking up after all these super short car naps. And I feel like with each kid, the age at which I was ready to commit to like crib naps got later and later because life, like the baby might have benefited from some real naps in their crib, but it was, baby wearing car naps. I used to transfer the car seat into the house, like carry it with the sleeping baby into the house and put it in this dark bathroom with the fan on. And sometimes they'd keep sleeping for a little while, but.
I told you that Brooke took a really long nap this morning and it was in her car seat on the way home from daycare. And I just let her hang out in there and she took a nice long nap.
And I know for me, each baby, that window went like 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, at least, you know, before both of us were like, okay, it would be better for everyone if we made some other sacrifices and got you real naps in your crib. But it took a while. Yeah. Okay, so that was sleep. I'm sure we could talk for an hour about it, but let's move on. So another category that came up a lot from listeners was how Claire has adjusted. And we talked a little bit about this the last time you were on, but Elise specifically wrote, I want to know if Allison has noticed jealousy in the older child and how she prioritizes who to give the attention to when. That's kind of a big question.
That's such a good question.
Like in the moment, right? Like the squeakier wheel sometimes.
Oh, definitely. It's you have to triage in a lot of ways that you didn't have to before. So overall, I would say that Claire's done really well with jealousy. She is just enamored with her sister and wants to give her hugs and kisses and, you know, absolutely loves her. When it isn't a concern is when she wants something or wants me and I'm nursing or caring with the baby or something. And so, like you said, it's kind of just triaging needs. This kid absolutely needs me right now and this one can wait a little bit. And the other thing, I actually think it might have been advice I'd heard on the Mom Hour, but, you know, my 5-month-old now or was a newborn can wait a little bit longer where, you know, the 2-year-old might need that extra bit of attention just in that moment. And I think in one of our previous segments, it's saying hold on right now, Brooke. Yeah. I'm going to give this to Claire, and showing her that she's still important.
Yes.
And relevant in her own way. And so it's tough, but, you know, figuring out in that moment just who needs you more. It's really hard to do.
It is really hard. And we did talk. I'm so glad you reminded everybody of that. If you haven't listened, you can go back and listen. We'll link up Allison's previous segment. But basically, yeah, letting the toddler hear you say, wait a minute, baby, I'm with the big kid now. I'm with sister now. And they do. They just over time, it becomes second nature when you're raising multiple kids that they're not always the center of attention. It's just such a transition for everyone in the first few months that it feels all important. But yes. it becomes so second nature. Claire will never even remember not having a little sister that sometimes needs your attention. So
exactly.
It's not that I want to diminish the importance of the question, but it's a question that every single parent going from one to two has it. And every single one survives through it and everybody's okay on the other side. So yeah.
And acknowledging that there will definitely be jealousy. There yeah. will definitely be moments when both kids want you at the exact same time and it's hard.
Yeah.
It's really, really hard. We had a stomach bug in our house not too long ago. Ugh. And you know, Claire just wanted to be held all day, but I had to nurse and
yeah.
do all sorts of other things. And it was probably the hardest parenting week, but yeah. we got through it. And yeah. you know, Claire wasn't held all day, but she did get a lot of extra snuggles and it was really hard, but everybody was okay.
Yep. Yes. Yes. Like Megan said in that recent episode, I forget, her yoga teacher said like, that was hard and we're okay. Like we yeah. survived, like that was hard,
but a good survived. Mantra.
Yes. Okay. So moving on, several listeners kind of had questions about your, like a day in the life or your mm-hmm. kind of just how you're making it through. You've been, just to remind everybody, if they're listening to you for the first time, you have a 6-month maternity leave. It is coming to an end, but so far soon. You've been home. Claire's been in school some. Do you have any general observations about what it's been like to adjust to this new normal and kind of carve out a structure or a schedule for yourself when you've been home? I think this is an interesting question because so far you haven't gone back to work. So you're mm-hmm. you're able to speak as a working mom, but you've also kind of had a taste of stay-at-home mom in the last few months. So what has that looked like for okay. you? Somebody asked, Danielle asked if you get up before the kids and try and get yourself ready. Do you try and have a schedule or some structure? Or do you just go with the flow? How has that worked?
That's such a good question. So I think the thing that I found most difficult about transitioning to two, then transitioning to one, is that you're fitting number two into an existing schedule. And I found that really, really challenging. So really what I've been trying to do is use Claire's schedule as kind of our nucleus and, like and building things around that, because she is such a good napper. She's a good sleeper. She needs food at very specific times. Yeah. And, you know, school helps her stick to that schedule. Mm-hmm. And so then building in those moments for Brooke in that existing schedule, in terms of doing stuff for myself, I definitely do try to make that work. A lot of the time it's waking up before the kids. So, Claire has a wake up time. She's doesn't get out of her room before 7:30.
Wow.
And so if I need to shower or, you know, I just need to come down and make coffee or have right. breakfast, I'll do that with Brooke. So she, if she's still sleeping, great. I'll, you know, leave her in her bassinet and go into the shower. But often she comes in and she sits in a little chair in the bathroom.
Right.
Or she comes downstairs with me. And she's
that's that moment where one
appendage.
Kid, sorry to interrupt. That's that moment no, where fine. One kid feels so much easier, right? Like that feels oh so God. Hard when it's your first, but now you're like, oh, the toddler's sleeping. So I just have you. It's so easy.
I have so much free time. This yeah. is great. Yeah. That is an interesting swap in perspective. Otherwise I do have to wait until Claire goes to school sometimes to shower, which again, like, oh, I've got one, I can shower. Right. I can do whatever I need.
Right.
But the other ways that I've been trying to build in schedule is figuring out how I can leverage existing time. So one of Brooke's naps is in the morning right after Claire is dropped off at school. Mm-hmm. So I know that she'll fall asleep in the car. That's one of her naps. Mm-hmm. It's in the car seat. She's comfortable. And then on the weekends when Claire's home, she can have that exact nap up in her crib. Mm-hmm. So it's worked out. It'll be an even different transition, of course, when I go back to work.
Right.
But because we've been building around Claire's schedule, sorry for hearing baby noises.
No, I love it.
building around Claire's schedule, she has kind of a typical work day built in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it's making sure that I've got that time in the morning to get ready. And then that same schedule will carry us through. And then we, in the evenings, it'll be the same schedule we're working off now because my husband comes home, we eat right. dinner all together, that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah, I love that. I think it's so helpful to just hear how it's really going.
Yeah.
So let's talk about transitioning back to work. It's pretty soon now. I can't believe that feel like it went by really fast from my perspective.
Yeah. Yes, it did.
So just talk through the actual logistics. What's going to happen? Is Brooke going to start at the same daycare where Claire is? And what's the plan?
She will. So she's starting in the infant room at Claire's school in the middle of March. And I'll transition back to work. I'm a consultant, so I'm not actually 100% sure what my day is going to look like. Mm-hmm. I won't know where I'm headed or if I'll be remote or if I'll be in an office setting until I start.
Okay.
Which is an added challenge because it's a little bit harder to build in that day.
Right.
But one of the things that I'm really fortunate to have is family close by. I know a lot of people aren't mm-hmm. so lucky. And so if there's any need to kind of bridge a gap or provide additional support there,
right.
My family is around. So
that's just
going to be interesting.
That's just a nice buffer to have for sure. How are you feeling in this moment about going back to work?
Oh, that's a loaded question. I have total mixed feelings, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been really nice because I've been able to give Claire a really nice short school schedule. She loves going to school, but I'm able to drop her off late, pick her up early, mm-hmm. take her out when needed. I'm home if she's sick.
Yeah.
And I've had really, really special time to bond with Brooke mm-hmm. while I've been home. So, you know, all of those things are going to be hard to, as it evolves, you know, mm-hmm. it's not going away, but it'll evolve. But then the other part of me is really excited to get dressed for work again mm-hmm. and, you know, have lunch with work friends and feel confident in a work environment. So mm-hmm. all of those challenges that it presents, I'm also really looking forward to. I do love my job. And I'm excited for Brooke to start school as hard as it is when they're that young. Mm-hmm. We've chosen a school that I am incredibly comfortable with. I mm-hmm. love the teachers there. They provide so much, you know, enrichment for the kids and Claire really thrives there. So seeing Brooke give that a go is, mm-hmm. I think, is going to be pretty exciting as well.
There is something special about having a sibling go into a school environment just speaking as someone who's now had kids in daycare or school or preschool for a long, long time, it sort of just connects that place even more to your family because now you've got two kids there. Now you're seeing the second kid go through the same milestones that your first did. And it is very special. So, I love that.
Well, and Claire is starting to get excited too. So our teachers all know Brooke and so they keep on saying Brooke's going to be starting school soon. And she knows where her classroom is and where her cubby will be. And, usually they help the younger one sort of adjust and they can come in and say hello. So she's so excited.
That will be really,
she just can't wait.
Really special. That's really great. Okay. So I have one last question and I thought this was such a good one. It came from Kazoo and she asked, how has co-parenting and household chore distribution with your spouse changed since you've had two kids?
Ooh, another good question. These are good questions.
No.
I am very, very fortunate to have a very involved spouse. So, one of the things that we did this time was kind of a man-on-man defense here. So, you know, as I was really in the trenches of nursing and recovery, he managed almost all of Claire's day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
He tends to take on a lot. So he took on making her meals and waking her up in the morning and being the one that helps with her nighttime routine. And as sort of we've gotten the hang of Brooke as well,
mm-hmm.
we've started to do more and more of that together. And so he's picked up a lot of, I don't cook or grocery shop. He does all of that.
Mm-hmm.
He is here in the morning and tries to be here as much as possible in the evenings, to help navigate that. So if anything, I would say he's taken on more of the load this time, you know, instead of it being more split, he's really taking on a lot. And it's been nice because it's given me that opportunity to really spend a lot of time with Brooke, and it's given him a lot of opportunity to really bond with Claire in a way he didn't get any opportunity to before. Obviously, you know, he was still their dad, but
no, I think there's so many good things that come out of that. And in particular with the day-to-day tasks of running a household, I think when both partners have experience doing everything, you have so much more empathy for the other person, and it's easier to jump in a pinch. You know, if you went down with the flu, he's not like, where do we keep the sippy cups? You know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of like painting that with a broad brush. But, and that goes both ways for everybody. If everybody at least has a familiarity with the day-to-day tasks, it's so much easier when somebody is out of town or down for the count. So that's awesome.
Well, interestingly, I'm actually going out of town for the first time on this Wednesday. So we're recording this on a Monday or Tuesday. I go next or tomorrow. Wow. So it's my first couple of nights away from Brooke and from both of them. And I think, you know, I still do all of Brooke's nighttime and the nighttime wakings. And obviously I'm nursing her. So I think he's a little nervous.
He will be so thankful for you when you get home. Thankful that you're home, and also just thankful that you exist.
Exactly. Oh, yes, he will.
Oh, that's really funny. Well, good for you for getting some time away. So I am going to wrap us up and let you get back to little Brooke, but you can tell her she was a very excellent podcast guest.
A vocal participant, I'd say.
A vocal participant in the conversation. Allison, just to remind everybody, you are co-host of the Crunchy Cocktail Hour podcast. That comes out every other Friday, and it can be found wherever you get your podcasts. And it is about clean living, green living, healthy living, organic products and food. And it's a great show. So if you guys listening have not checked out Crunchy Cocktail Hour, look it up, and we will link it up in the show notes. And Allison, thanks so much for being here. Have fun on your trip.
Thanks for having me. Oh, I definitely will.
Bye.
Bye.
Guess what, Megan? Over 10,000 teens are already using our sponsor, Erica, to help them unplug.
That is amazing. Erica, that's Erica with a K, is the social media health app for teens that gives them the tools to unplug whenever they need to for improved health, study focus, sleep, and daily balance. It's so cool how this works to hide distracting apps from your phone at the touch of a button, keeping them out of sight and out of mind without deleting your data.
Yeah, you know, teens really get that social media comes with risks, including addiction, and Erica helps them build healthy habits and self-regulation that will benefit them their whole lives. Tell your teens about Erica and save 20% on the Erica family plan with promo code THEMOMHOUR. Go to erica.app and search for plans. That's Erica with a K, Erika.app, and use code THEMOMHOUR to save 20%.
The Mom Hour is brought to you by The Essential Calendar. Sarah, this is our favorite calendar for busy moms because its beautiful and simple design shows around 3 months at a time.
Yeah, and with summer fast approaching, now is a great time to get The Essential Calendar and see what I've been raving about all these years. Get 10% off your order at theessentialcalendar.com/themomhour. That's 10% off at theessentialcalendar.com/themomhour.